friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, famous. You and I tuned into the Tim and Friends show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
This is Tim and Friends for Monday, March 15th, live from the Sportsnet Studios in downtown Toronto. I am Tim McAuliffe, and you are friends. So is Stephen Brunt, David Amber, Adam Rank of the NFL Network, and James Jones as NFL news hits following Drew Brees' retirement. Starting to heat up in the NFL. And the New England Patriots leading the way. That's right, kids. Another jam-packed show for episode number 6. Another great weekend for the distractions we know and love. Unless, of course, you're a Toronto sports fan. In that case, tough weekend, kids. Raptors fell last night in Chicago, their fifth straight loss, which is about as rare as an artist actually singing at the Grammys. Got it good, and since you understood, they didn't sing. They just lip-synced. It's a thing that they do in 2021. Anyways, it's the first five-game losing streak in Nick Nurse's tenure as the head coach. The five also matches the number of players missing in COVID protocols. In the coming days, we're going to examine if the Raptors will get healthy and somehow show their typical toughness, or if this season has just become too much for even them to take. The Scotia North still red hot, even as the Toronto Maple Leafs aren't. The Buds limped into 4 days off, losers of 5 of their last 6. And while there might be legit convos about Freddie Anderson, his workload, and the Leafs' ability to win when it matters most, but maybe it's time to shed some light elsewhere. Shout out to Joey DeCord and the Sen Sickos. Both great stories of perseverance, the fans and the goaltender. And how about Winnipeg? Jets made a statement by taking 5 out of a possible 6 points from the Leafs, showing off a top six, that not only matched up with the Buds big guns, but outplayed them. Add their Vezina winning goalie, the Jets are just 4 points back, a top spot in the North with 3 games in hand. They will play one of those 3 games in hand tonight against the Habs, the first of 2 against Montreal. Habs clinging to 4th in the division after a great start to the season and just received word that Ben Chiarot was lost for 4 to 6 weeks with a hand fracture and surgery to repair that fracture. The Canucks, 3 points back of 4th, have won 4 of 5 behind Thatcher Demko, who is finding bubble form again, posting a .952 save percentage in the month of March. A win against the Sens and a Habs loss, they're within a point of that final playoff spot. And let's not forget about the Battle of Alberta tonight. On Sportsnet West and nationally on Sportsnet 1, Flames are 2-0 under Daryl Sutter. They've allowed a grand total of 43 shots in those 2 games. Don't look now, but Calgary could pull even with the Habs for the final playoff spot, depending on how things break down tonight. Yes, friends, the North is getting crazier than a Bills fan pondering a Super Bowl matchup with the Dallas Cowboys.
Can't wait to rub this in his face. He's been telling us this for over 10 years about Dallas. Well, it's the Bills. Buffalo all the way this time. 3 times. The 3rd time is a charm. Dallas is going down, Gary. Only Buffalo is going to win it. Dallas is going down.
That is my guy, Mark Miller. Oh, Mark Miller, so good. Digital producer Jesse Rubinoff joining me now. Can we see if Bill's Mafia knows where Mark is these days?
I got my best people on it. We gotta track him down. A lot of Canadians in Bill's Mafia.
Oh,
we'll track him down.
Oh, my goodness.
Pretty
that
good.
Was absolutely glorious. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Battle of Alberta. It's on Sportsnet West and 1 tonight, one of 3 in the North. We will preview all 3 in about an hour with Kyle Bukauskas in Ottawa, Sean Reynolds in Winnipeg, and Ryan Leslie in Calgary. That's all coming up, but we start with a biggie. Drew Brees officially retired Sunday after 20 years in the NFL. He leaves the game with his name littered across the record book. A surefire first ballot Hall of Famer, and perhaps the most important point, providing more proof that we don't know jack. And come National Signing Day in the U.S. or NFL Draft Day, the screamers and yellers about who needs to take who, those guys also don't know jack. They're just another Mark Miller. Breeze was doubted every step of his career. After tearing his ACL in his junior year of high school, he received scholarship offers from just two Division I schools, Purdue and Kentucky. He went to Purdue. All he did there was set 13 Big Ten records, 19 school records, and finished in the top four in Heisman Trophy voting twice. Not bad for a guy passed over by something like 120 D1 programs. Most assumed Breeze would be a first-round pick. Slipped to the Chargers into the second round because of concerns about his height and his arm strength. It's almost comical to look back now, as Breeze did a couple years ago on the Dan Patrick Show.
Tends to sidearm his passes going deep. Okay. Lacks accuracy and touch on his long throws. Seems more comfortable in the short intermediate passing attack. Well, that's the whole design of the spread offense.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Does not possess the ideal height you look for in a pro passer.
There we go. Oh, there we go.
I didn't think that was coming.
too short. It's the same thing they said about Steph Curry, whose college scouting report was also making the rounds on Sunday as he celebrated his 33rd birthday with, 32 points. Breeze too short, Curry too short, Russell Wilson too short. I'm sure Freddie Van Vliet heard too short. Listen, the only too short we believe in on this show is this dude.
You know they can't play on my court, can't hang with the big dogs, stay on the porch, blow the whistle.
Too short, Josh Donaldson's favorite artist, too. It's a deep cut. If you remember it, you remember it. What the scouts overlooked when it came to Breeze was his track record of winning. He led his high school to the first ever Texas State Championship. He led Purdue to its first Rose Bowl in more than 30 years. And then he led the Saints to their one and only Super Bowl title. The best part is he wouldn't have even been a Saint if he wasn't passed over again. In his final game with the Chargers in 2005, Breeze suffered a major shoulder injury that required surgery. The Chargers let him walk in favor of Philip Rivers. So Breeze, out there looking, got himself ready to start the 2006 season in what Dr. James Andrews called the most remarkable recovery of an athlete he's ever treated. The only question was, who would he be playing for? Nick Saban and the Dolphins showed interest, but team doctors reportedly warned against signing Breeze. Instead, they traded for Dante Culpepper. Breeze ended up in New Orleans, and the rest, as they say, is history. It was a place no NFL player wanted to be, a city still recovering from the devastation of Hurricane Katrina, and a team that had just one playoff win in the previous 39 years. Breeze embraced the challenge, leading the Saints to the NFC Conference Championship game in his first season, and yes, the Super Bowl title 3 years later. Together with Sean Payton, they produced some of the most prolific offenses the NFL has ever seen. And off the field, Breeze had an impact on his adopted city, perhaps greater than any other athlete of his generation. He could never get back to that second Super Bowl, which keeps him out of the debate on the second greatest quarterback of all time conversation. But Breeze may be in the conversation for the greatest underdog of all time. So the next time someone is screaming and yelling about what they know on National Signing Day or the first day of the NFL draft, just tell them the story of Drew Brees.
First things first.
Or Tom Brady, or Joe Montana, or Russell Wilson, or Aaron Rodgers, or Stephen Brunt. Nah, Stephen Brunt is a first-round pick, and he joins me now on Tim and Friends. Thank you for batting leadoff today. And to quote the Golden Girls, thank you for being a friend.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me in. It is great to be back in the clubhouse here. Yes. I'm glad they liberated you from your basement. It's great to be back here. I've had a lot of fun in this joint.
So is my mom's glad that I'm out of the basement too. That was my Sid joke. I'm using it on myself. You've been around the business for a while. Is NFL draft expert the biggest scam or the hardest gig in all of sports?
Well, you know, hats off to Mel Kiper for inventing it. Like, right, yes. Like, right? He's the original. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be pretty good. Yeah. Like, I don't have a lot of so there are great quarterbacks who come along, generational quarterbacks who come along, and everybody gets it. But right. You know, you alluded to it. Like Breeze threw his entire, you know, although you know he played at a Div 1 program, he was a star there.
Yeah.
Brady, who was a 6th round pick out of Michigan, who's not the most athletic looking guy in the world, you know, and was a 4th stringer in New England when he first went to camp.
Lost his job at Michigan to Drew Henson.
Yes, lost his job to and played behind Michael Bishop at New England, former CFL quarterback.
Nice, yeah.
Sometimes, like, think of the guys that we have talked a lot about over the last few years, and you know that's not always their fault. Sometimes you go to a terrible organization or terrible program, but like I remember vividly being in Florida this time of year because of baseball and listening to the debate about whether the Bucs should take Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota.
Right.
So, you know, one, you know, again, in theory, both generational quarterbacks hasn't really panned out for either guy.
No, and it's every year, and listen, I'm not saying Trevor Lawrence isn't that guy, but for every Peyton Manning, there is a Tom Brady, there is a Russell Wilson in the 3rd round. Like Dak Prescott and Patrick Mahomes are the 2 highest paid quarterbacks in the league. Mitch Trubisky was taken ahead of Patrick Mahomes, and Prescott's a 4th rounder.
Yeah, and a couple, you know, there are a couple guys taken ahead of Josh Allen. You know, and that's and he's looking okay now. Again, he's got great physical tools. You know, more than Drew Brees has had, more than Tom Brady has. But still, like that pick looks pretty good right now.
I was reading a Bleacher Report ranking of 1st round quarterbacks in preparation for the Drew Brees story, and it was after Josh Allen's rookie year, and they ranked him the 23rd best 1st round pick. And just a couple of years later, they probably put him like 3rd or 4th or 5th. Like, it's unbelievable the growth that we have seen in him. So even with guys where you think you know it after a year, you don't.
No. No, and I just want to go back to a couple things you said about Breeze when you were doing that the intro. Mm-hmm. The stuff about the community in New Orleans is a place I've spent a lot of time. I've been lucky enough to spend a lot of time in New Orleans, and I was there right after Katrina. And how he fits in that community is kind of hard to describe. You know, it's way beyond the star athlete fan thing. It really is. And of course, yes, he only got to 1 Super Bowl, but there was that pass interference penalty that wasn't called.
Yeah.
Would have gone to 2, guaranteed, and he might have won it. So I think we always have to put a little asterisk there next to 1 Super Bowl only with Drew Brees, because the most egregious non-call in NFL history.
It's how fine the line is. Like, you can go back to every quarterback and find lines that, well, maybe not Tom Brady, because Tom Brady's that good. But with everybody else, you can find that fine line. You and I both love the CFL, and I add that caveat because this comes from a place of love. But last week, I couldn't help but think of you when the CFL-XFL story arose, and my first thought was, this seems really half-baked, and maybe even the oven's not even on when Randy Ambrosi said, we're talking about talking. What's your take on this CFL-XFL thing?
Oh, the oven's on.
Yeah?
Yeah, and it's more than talking about talking. And I say that, you're right. You always have to have the disclaimer if you're, especially for people in the West and you're from the East, you always have to say, look, I grew up with the CFL. I love the CFL. I'm a Hamilton guy. The team that means more to me than any team on earth are the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and they've broken my heart a lot. And so let's get that out there. I don't hate the league, but no, this is more than talking about talking. They're down the road here, and what it turns into, I'm not so sure. But I think everybody should go back to Randy Ambrosi appearing before the federal government last year asking for a handout to try and get them through the pandemic, and remember the numbers he talked about in terms of how much money the CFL is going to lose. Those numbers were real. That happened. They're heading towards a season now where they don't know when it's going to start. They don't know if they can sell any tickets. They don't know when they can open camp.
Right.
They don't know and it's a gate-driven league, right?
Right.
So like there's an enormous amount of uncertainty around the CFL, and you've been around the league long enough to know as well that it's not like the business model is perfect. It's really lousy. It's fragile. And think of what losing a season or a season and a half would do to that business model.
So there seems to be a disconnect when it comes to the CFL, because if you're in a market that flourishes, you say, what the hell are these people talking about? And if you're in a market like Toronto, you're like, how the hell has it existed? But I think because of that disconnect, you get all of this reaction mm-hmm. from around Canada when you talk about it. But losing one season and then whatever the hell this season ends up being isn't going to make money. Like, two losing seasons for this league could cost us this league. Is that why we're talking about the XFL and CFL?
Yes, straight up. And I'm not a doomsayer or any of those things, but I've been through CFL yeah. near-death experiences before. Like, Christ. American expansion, there's a reason. The reason they did it is because there was no plan die. B.
Yeah.
They had to do it or die. So we're kind of in the same spot right now. Some of it's not their fault. Pandemic is the pandemic. But, you know, again, the cracks start to show when you're under stress, under crisis in many things. And we're seeing the cracks
so
start to
show.
So
do you know, and if you don't worry about it. We'll continue the conversation with the Tim and friends. I don't know what to call them anymore. We used to call them Tim and Citizens. But we'll continue with Jesse and get people to tweet in at Tim and Friends about their reaction. But do you know what they're like? Are they talking about, like, the XFL and CFL playing together?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
The worst jump of the hurdle was they're playing four-down football. They're doing everything that they can to become an NFL minor league. Have you heard anything along those? Because here's the deal. As soon as we get to three-down football and ratio, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people who get really worried.
Theoretically, they do. Like, it never really translates to filling stadiums, but yes, it's right. a kind of an empty cultural conversation, but it doesn't actually turn. Like, if everybody loved that stuff so much, there wouldn't be an issue, right?
Right.
If everybody.
And they love it in Saskatchewan.
Yes.
And they love it in Hamilton.
To a point, yeah.
And they love it in Winnipeg.
Sort of, sometimes. They got a nice stadium there now.
Edmonton, kind of, sort of, yeah, sometimes, too.
Okay, you've just ended the list, right? Ottawa's been a nice story.
Yeah, Ottawa's been a great story.
But, no, look, that stuff, none of that stuff, they're not going to go to America and play three-down football. You can't put a Canadian field in the stadiums we're talking about in America, right. Period. The ratio, forget about it. And it's a bad thing economically for the Canadian league because it creates a false economy. And, no slight to Canadian players, but it does. It creates scarcity, right? Yeah.
For those who don't know, the Canadians get paid more than the Americans because if you're a good Canadian,
yeah,
you're very valuable.
And you have to play them, right?
Right.
You need them on your roster.
Them, yeah.
So and they're scarce. American players aren't scarce. So I think they might take some Canadian stuff with them, maybe, the motion, maybe yard off the ball, but that kind of thing, no, that's not part of this discussion. No one wants to play three-down football in America.
Right. And I was going to make the argument that three-down football is actually better. And I will make I love American football. I love Canadian football. I think the Canadian game is better. But you're right. None of those stadiums can fit 10-yard field plus 20-yard end zones.
No.
They do not have that ability.
And I would buy that argument about the rules except for the way the NFL plays football now. Like, that, you can't tell me it's more fun than watching Patrick Mahomes. NFL football is a lot of fun now.
Yeah, and NFL football has morphed into a lot of CFL football.
Yeah. Yeah, and the
RPO, that was all being done. Chip Kelly was coming up here to study it in Canada and then brought it to the college game, and now it's
so the 3 yards in a cloud of dust stuff, like, that's... No one plays that way anymore.
Yeah, relatively so.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
Well, ask
Rasmus Danny about how that's going.
Yeah. All right, listen, this is going to draw some reaction. So, listen, I always want to bring people in to talk about their passions. I know you're passionate about the CFL.
Mm-hmm.
I also know you're passionate about the sweet science.
Yes, sir.
And you and I have had some great conversations in the past about boxing. I would love to walk down the road of Marvelous Marvin Hagler with you, but then maybe we'll get some tweets from Jesse and we'll circle back on the CFL. Sound like
good.
A plan?
Yeah, I could do that.
I'm doing the show meeting on the air as we speak. All right, time for our first break of the day. Still to come, Adam Rank and James Jones on Breeze and a pretty interesting NFL hot stove. Plus, we'll get you set for a busy night in the north. But of course, Brunt's going to stick around and we will discuss some Blue Jays baseball, the CFL, and boxing's heyday as we say goodbye to one of the best to ever do it. Marvelous Marvin Hagler next on this Monday edition, Tim and Friends on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Has won his first game in the National Hockey League.
Gonna get emotional.
Against the Leafs, at home. I don't even have words right now.
Reggie on back for Lucas Moura, makes it up for Lamela, through a crowd of legs, and in.
This is special, really special.
Jackson Hayes with the poster.
Tap your head, young fella, tap your head.
Massachusetts, weighing 159 and 1/4 pounds, the undisputed middleweight champion of the world, Marvelous Marvin Hagler.
He was real, he was honest, he was reliable. He was what you want in a friend.
And finally, it's Hagler against Hearn.
A more aggressive start by Hagler, looking right for the body. Marvin Hagler only wants the body.
He was steel. He was Superman. Punches bounced off him the way bullets bounced off Superman.
Wild first round. Oh, what a shot. And it was Hagler who initiated it, not Thomas Hearn. And a left by Hagler. Hearn comes back. Another right. That one's got Hearn. First round. Incredible. Perhaps one of the best in middleweight history. Hearn is back. Takes another right. Hearn's in deep trouble again. Hearn's in now.
Marvelous Marvin Hagler.
Rest in peace, champ. You were the best.
Teddy Atlas honoring Marvin Hagler, who left us a little too early at the age of 66. Stephen Brunt in studio here on Tim and Friends. How will you remember Marvelous Marvin Hagler? I shouldn't have called him Marvin Hagler because he officially changed his name.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's I pointed that out to somebody the other day when the news broke that, yeah. That's his legal name. And that tells you something, that in order to make sure people called him that.
Yes.
You know, because he didn't take that for granted, he went out and changed his name.
Yeah.
I only saw him fight. I covered the Leonard fight in 87, but I certainly saw a lot of Marvin Hagler, watched Marvin Hagler, interviewed Marvin Hagler. What do I think? In that Teddy Atlas clip, he talks about exactly what I'm going to talk about, which is that, you know, no one wanted to fight him. He was a southpaw. He had kind of a career. It was almost like a club fighter in the stuff he had to do to get to a championship.
Yeah.
You know, he went to Philly and fought, you know, Boogaloo Watts and Willie the Worm Monroe, lost to both those guys and then avenged those fights. Benny Briscoe, all these incredibly tough guys. No breaks, right? Fought in Boston, fought in the New England area, which was his home. No promoter kind of pushed him forward. Nobody wanted to touch him. And then he finally got a shot at the title against Vito Anofermo and got robbed. Like, it was a draw the first time, and it was a horrible, horrible decision. So no politics on his side, nothing.
Right.
He did it through willpower and ferocity and skill. You know, he didn't have the best management. He certainly didn't have the best corner. The Petronelli brothers made a hash of that Leonard fight. But just the absolute – and, you know, and the sense of principle. I know that's a kind of a weird thing to talk about. But,
yeah.
You know, after the Leonard fight where he felt like he was robbed, and I'm still – I go back and forth on that one all the time. He could have made easy money in a rematch. You know, Leonard was there on the table. And all you had to do was show up. And he said no. He was so hurt by that decision going the way it did and feeling that he had been jobbed that night that mm-hmm. he never stepped in the ring again. He moved to Italy.
Right.
So, you know, and that was a stand he took on principle. He said, I'm not gonna put myself through this, even for millions and millions of dollars.
Especially when you consider, like you mentioned, like he would go to Philadelphia because that's where the best fighters were.
Yeah.
And he would fight in their town with their judges in their arenas or their clubs. It wasn't even arenas at that point. And I heard a story that Sugar Ray Leonard. So if you're involved with two fights, one called The War mm-hmm. and the other called Super Fight, you're probably a pretty good fighter. And the first one, for the kids out there, the Hagler Hearns was The War. And that first round, probably among the greatest in the history of the sweet science. And then the Super Fight was as contested as they come because of the styles of the two fighters. And Sugar Ray was so smart in stealing rounds. I don't even know if they're stealing rounds late, but he would finish with a flurry. And Hagler would just do what Hagler did, which was not back down.
It's funny.
Ever.
When I look back on that Leonard fight, you know, Ray set him up, set the whole thing up, yeah. Right? Right. So Leonard had retired because he had a detached retina. He came back from it. He teased the comeback. You know, once said there was this big public event at a dinner where he said, "I'm going to make an announcement," and everybody thought Marvin was there, and everybody thought he was going to announce the fight, the comeback, and he said, "But it'll never happen." Just yanked his chain, kept yanking Marvin's chain. But Ray Leonard was here working with Sean O'Sullivan a lot at that time. And I remember kind of the moment when he stopped being as interested in Sean O'Sullivan and decided he was coming back. And it was around the time of the John Mugabe fight, where Ray always claimed he saw something. But, you know, in the week before that fight in Vegas, they had a public sparring session. Ray Leonard had one. And again, remember, people had just seen Marvin Hagler do that. Right. And they hadn't seen Ray in the ring in a long time. And his one comeback fight against Kevin Howard, he looked bad. So people thought he was going to get slaughtered.
Yeah.
And in sparring, he fought a guy named Quincy Taylor, who was also a southpaw. And Quincy Taylor dropped Ray Leonard in sparring in front of all the media.
Right.
And it sure looked real. I was there. But, you know, I think he was playing that expectations game. And I know it shouldn't work with judges. But the sense was that after he survived a couple of rounds, he was winning.
Right.
And I think psychologically that worked. You know, I sat next to the great Milt Donnell from the Toronto Star at that fight in the second row. And Milt forever believed that Marvin had won, and on my scorecard, Ray had won. But the more I go back to it, I think Milt was right.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable one. To me, there was this weekend, there was a remembrance of boxing's heyday. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that? Because I watched The War over again, because it's on YouTube, and you can just pull it up and watch it.
Me too. Like, how can you not watch it?
How can you not? But did you not have, this feeling of, man, has boxing fallen?
Yeah, that was a great era. You know, it's funny because it was an era when, you know, mostly if you talk about kind of big eras in boxing and when it was in the mainstream, it's about heavyweights. But there was a stretch there when it wasn't about heavyweights. You know, Larry Holmes was the heavyweight champion. He was not necessarily a popular figure, great fighter, but not wildly popular. But it was all about, you know, Hearns and Hagler and Duran. You know, it was all about that middleweight tournament that was kind of going on. That's where the action was. And some classic bouts, you know. Like Duran gave Marvin a hell of a night, you know, lost the decision to him. Tommy Hearns knocked Roberto Duran out cold on his face.
Right.
You didn't quite know which way any of those fights was going to go. You know, Hagler or Hearns and Leonard the first time was an amazing fight, right? Yeah. The one where Angelo Dundee coaxed him to win the fight in the 14th and 15th rounds. But, it was like each one of those matchups, vivid characters, great boxing, you know, and very much in the mainstream conversation.
The mainstream conversation is like we could hear Al Michaels' voice on the play-by-play there. And I wonder if, and listen, I understand the pay-per-view fed a lot of fighters at the very top a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But did this, and I'm kind of comparing it to now in our world where we play World Series games at 9 p.m. and we feed the very top, but you forget about the kids. Like, did we, by putting boxing on pay-per-view, ruined the game because you weren't feeding a new generation of fight fans with live on national TV, not at midnight, which is when Mike Tyson ended up fighting all of his fights to maximize what they got
out
of him.
That's true. On Monday nights a lot of the time too, right, to drive the audience. I think that was a factor, well, at that time maybe as well. Like, not less so now, I think, and it's not like they're like closed circuit theater fights go back to the early 1960s, right? Yeah. Ali's fights were on, you know, in theaters, or you would go to Maple Leaf Gardens to watch it on a big screen.
Right.
That was coming out of the era of Friday night fights and network fights, where boxing was on at 1.4 nights a week on U.S. network television because it was cheap and easy to do. So it cannibalized it then, and it continued to cannibalize it now, because, you know, there's so many different platforms and so many places you can watch boxing almost every night of the week now, but
there's no star making.
No,
like, it's so hard to make a star.
Well, that and the rise of MMA and the fact that they have a plan and they could build stars and they had a business plan that worked rather than the boxing guys who were always trying to cut each other's throats. Right. There's no coherence. So, a bunch of things played into it.
One promoter can help make stars, and that's what you're seeing with Dana White, where he builds up these stars and then is able to sell them at a high level, even though, theoretically, in MMA, they don't last as long at the top because it's harder to be there.
Helps when you run a monopoly, though. Monopolies,
of course, it does.
Monopolies are a lot easier.
And you rip off the bottom end.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, then. Because we saw today Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua.
Mm.
Is that a chance? Like, that's the first time that I've said, this seems like a step to the positive because some thought, wow, you couldn't get this one together.
Yeah, it's, well, maybe part of what forced them together is the pandemic, right? Like, it's these guys haven't, boxing's had a tough go the last year, like everything else, right? No live audiences. So there's too much money not to do it in the UK. Like, they're going to fill a soccer stadium twice for this fight and the rematch. So
if they can, yeah.
Yeah, and it is mainstream there, absolutely mainstream there. Whether those guys capture the imagination here, I don't know. It's great. It's like they're two great characters. It's got all the kind of classic elements to it. So it might, and they are heavyweights. But yeah, I think it's. I know what it's going to do in the UK. I'm a little less sure what it's going to do in North America.
Is it just? I mean, I kind of grew up on the tail end of boxing's height, but I loved sitting with my dad and watching fights. And my dad spent time in the Windsor area, which meant he backed all those Detroit fighters the entire time.
All the Kronk guys, yeah.
Yeah, all the Kronk guys. And I'll never forget, I was cheering for Hearns, and Hagler, Hearns walks out for the war, and he has this like little bad boy strut walking to the middle of the ring. And I got immediate respect for Hagler, because as Hearns does this walk towards the middle of the ring, Hagler just meets him there and throws a bomb that takes the bad boy strut right out of him. Walks, boom!
Yeah.
Like, you're not doing that in here.
Yeah,
like,
there's not a lot of feeling out in this fight.
But you know. Do you think that we get to the point where, and listen, we both understand punching people in the head is not good, but there is also a base instinct in a lot of people that enjoy watching this take place and seeing the science of it all. Are we just, is it forever going to be now niche?
Yeah, probably. I can't. There's a lot of other stuff out there too. There's just the competition is different than it once was. As I say, it used to dominate network television in the early days of television. But look, it has been with us. It has been with us in the form we now understand it for more than 100 years. It has been with us in other forms, probably going back to Cain and Abel.
Right.
So it's not going anywhere. I know. Like, I can't defend it morally. Don't ask me to, or medically.
Right.
I can't. But the lizard brain. We retain the lizard brain. It's still there.
That's a great way to put it. Because I'm with you. Like, I've sat here and talked about concussions and I've talked about all those things that you lay down. And yet there's still something in me that wants to know who the toughest man on planet Earth is.
Well, in that 3 minutes, like I say, it's not a good argument for brain health. But for pure adrenaline, like, what have you seen this better than the first 3 minutes of that fight?
Yeah. And the way people react to the first 3 minutes. And again, we're not trying to qualify anything here, but just the way people reacted to that 3 minutes in the war. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's unbelievable. It is literally unbelievable. All right, we'll take the break. Can we keep you for one more?
Yes, sir.
Talk a little baseball.
Okay.
Maybe get some reaction to our conversation about the CFL. All right, we'll do all that. Still to come, 3 games in the tightening Scotia North tonight. We'll go live to all those arenas. But I got one more with Stephen Brunt, as he's promised me. So we will head to Florida and get the latest on the Jays and a starting rotation that is starting to look a little bit better. Just how good can they be next? And Tim and friends, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. Welcome back to Tim and Friends on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 360. Stephen Brunt is in studio with me, as is Jesse Rubinoff, our digital producer. And we brought up the XFL-CFL thing early on.
Mm-hmm.
And as Stephen and I both know, Jesse, from having talked about this in the past, it draws different reactions from different parts of this country and different fans of football. What are we getting back on this one?
Well, I think everyone's in agreement that we could all listen to Stephen Brunt talk about the CFL and Marvin Hagler so for as long as possible. Alex writes in, I'd love to see a CFL XFL 2022 cross promotion game with all-star games, CFL versus XFL, or a World Series style champion versus champion game. The people are thinking. They want it to be entertaining, right?
That's what I said, Stephen. I thought maybe if this were, and I don't think this is what you're talking about, but maybe if this were, the CFL were to play their season, the XFL were to play their season, and at the end they crossed, Grey Cup champion plays big game at the end champion. I don't know what the XFL is going to call it this time.
Except that's a spring league, and it's that they're not going to go against the NFL. So unless the CFL becomes a spring league, I guess they could. but I don't think that's where this is headed.
Right. Then the XFL wants to go nowhere near Labor Day.
Yeah, they're Labor Day, college football starts, the NFL starts. They're not going to play. No one's going to play football in the fall in the United States against the NFL. There's, you know, long history of, like, look, never mind that. Breakaway football leagues, non-NFL leagues, you have to go back to the AFL to find one that lasted.
Right.
So there's not a great track record here.
No.
But the, look, I think the fact...
Well, the CFL has lasted.
The CFL has lasted. Yes. But the fact that they're willing to jump in with The Rock and whatever he bought in that bankruptcy sale maybe tells you something about where they think the world is.
Yeah, that to me is the biggest part of this that I think people don't understand, is how dire it would be for the CFL. And I understand why, because if you're in one of those markets that works, you're like, what the hell are they talking about? Except you and I both saw it. Oh, well, if you're playing the Sky Dome, the Argos can't work. So get them to BMO Field and it'll work. And at BMO Field, they've got 12 people.
It's the same thing, right? It's the same thing. And I think what you've got from a business point of view, the community-owned teams out west are a different thing. Now, they can't carry debt, but
which is a big thing.
But think about the individual owners in this league.
Yeah.
Think about the people who have shoveled millions and millions of dollars into it and who took the hit they took last year and are about to take another guaranteed hit this year and then are going to be asked to go forward.
Right. And some of them already bailed out, like Bob Young and Hamilton bailed out the Tiger Cats.
That's right. So I'm not sure. I would think he's net negative on the Tie Cats.
I would think he's net negative too. And when you're really talking about this, and I know people are like, well, these guys are rich. If someone told you you got to hand away $20 million a year, would you do it?
Forever.
Like, yeah.
Right, with no payoff, right? You host a great cup, you get a payoff. But otherwise, if you don't think this system, that this model will ever create a profit, and you're coming out of a pandemic, which has, again, created a whole bunch of other issues, why would you keep going?
Right. And I get all of the small arguments, but what I'm saying is they're small arguments. So the three-down football, the size of the field, all those things that you love about Canadian football, if there's no league... There's no Canadian football unless you're going to U Sports games. And guess what? I've been there. You're not going there.
Two more.
Okay.
Two more XFL, CFL related tweets. And then I got a little surprise from what we discussed off the top of the show. Okay. So why don't we go to Adam, who says, I know the rest of the country will hate me, but I want the NFL to give Toronto a team, steal the Argos name, and put it there. Toronto sports fans buy into the best talent in the world. Don't forget the hashtag Tim and Friends. And then Anthony writes in, I'm a huge Tie Cats fan. Like you there, I don't know what to make of things. Don't take away our three down game. Lots of Canadians obviously very passionate about the CFL. Now,
Hold on. Before you move on.
Yeah, sure.
This Toronto NFL thing, right? Like, they tried. Was that a success?
No. And I'm sure there'll be a conversation someday in the distant future about a stadium being built and about a team again. But I'm not sure. I've been in that conversation for
a long time.
Good part of my adult life, right? It hasn't panned out so far. I think it would work. I think a team here would work. I've always thought that. I can't see why it wouldn't.
If you gave them their own team as opposed to someone else's team.
There were a lot of issues with the Bills and Toronto series.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. I was there for two of them, I think. It wasn't very entertaining, got to say.
All right. What's the surprise?
You want to move on to the surprise?
Well, you keep mentioning the surprise.
Okay, fine.
So
earlier at the top of the show, you asked me about Mark Miller. Asked me to track him down. Yeah. You know, the screaming guy. Why don't we show the clip one more time so the viewers know exactly what they're talking about?
Oh, Cowboys. He's going after the Cowboys.
I can't wait to rub this in his face. He's been telling us this for over 10 years about Dallas. Well, it's the Bills. Dallas is going down, Gary. Only Buffalo is going to win it. Dallas is going down.
It's so glorious.
It's so, so good. Okay, so you asked me to track him down. I told you that we'd get our best people on it, okay?
Uh-oh.
So in 2019, so this tweet that he publishes was from December 4th, 2019. The Bills had just come off a victory over the Dallas Cowboys.
So he's the thing.
So Mark Miller, Dallas went down, tweets, for everyone who doesn't believe this is really me, hashtag Dallas went down. Why don't we have a listen?
He's a real thing. Oh, look at that.
This is for all you Bills fans out there. Wanted to know, where did Mark Miller go? Well, I got a message for you 27 years later, Gary. Dallas went down, Gary. Only Buffalo won that game. Dallas went down.
I hope Mark is still here to see what they're doing right now, because that is unbelievable.
I'm going to be watching that a couple more times tonight. Get me fired up maybe before a big game.
I love that he went back to Gary, too.
Yes.
Let me tell you, Gary. All right, let's get to your final passion here. I'm sure you've got many more. In fact, I know you have many more because I've seen you listen to music before. The Toronto Blue Jays in action today. Taking on, this was earlier today, live on Sportsnet. It began the same way George Springer began a game a couple days ago. Jonathan Davis leading off, taking Matt Boyd deep and gone, former Jay. First home run of the spring, it's 1-0. Meanwhile, Hyunjin Ryu making his second appearance this spring. First battery faces Victor Reyes, his window shopping, as he paints the corner, as Hyunjin Ryu is wont to do. Bottom third, 2-1, gets Reyes again. Breaking ball for strike three. Went 4 scoreless, striking out 4 on the day. Top 9, Jays looking for some insurance. Chavez Young down the line. Add 2 more. And yes, the Bluebirds are nesting with a 4-0 win over the Tigers. And Steven, Hyunjin Ryu, 4 scoreless. Manoah looked pretty good in his outing. I don't know where he starts. Robbie Ray has looked good this spring. Is perhaps this rotation, much consternation surrounding this rotation, is perhaps it may be better than we initially thought?
Well, I'll tell you, Ryu was fantastic today. That was a masterpiece. It's so much fun watching him pitch. Art of pitching and setting up those hitters. Now, you know, it's not like they're the 27 Yankees. but, you know, a not exactly representative lineup of Jays today winning that game, but Ryu looked spectacular. And, you know, TJ Zoik looked really good. Like, a lot of guys look good. What I would say about the rotation is, yeah, Robbie Ray has looked, you know, it's not that long ago that he was good.
Right.
So I think you can dream on that a little bit and say, you know, maybe they figured something out with him, because it's not that long ago that he was a Cy Young contender in the National League. They do have some really good young arms. And Manoah's a college guy. When they drafted him, they said, this is a fast-track guy. Now, he's only ever played low A, right? He played in Vancouver.
Yeah.
We don't know what they did at the mystery camp last year. In a normal year, I'd say he's going to be in double A to start this year, but he could move quickly. But here's the qualifier for all of that. They're going to need a ton of arms this year. Like, everybody's going to need a ton of arms.
Yeah.
So the notion of the, you know, like, don't fixate on the 5-man rotation, because, like, it's not just the Jays. Like, everybody's going to go 12 starters deep this year because of the 60 games and just because of everything coming out of that bizarro year. I think depth is going to be an asset. So the Anthony Kays and Zoik and a bunch of those guys who would be the Buffalo rotation right now,
they'll
set foot in Toronto this year, guaranteed.
But this is bizarro too, electric boogaloo, right? Like, that's where we're going here.
it's going to be. I have no idea how they're going to manage how you manage pitching this year. Like, I think the shuttle to AAA, again, we don't know when AAA is going to start exactly, but the shuttle to AAA will be very, very active. I think you're going to see piggyback starters. I think you're going to see openers. I think you're going to see a lot of stuff. That's, you know, I think Ryu will do what he wants to do because he's the boss.
Right.
But everybody else, I think it's going to be really challenging for Charlie Montoyo and for Pete Walker and their equivalents for other teams, because I think everybody's facing this.
So when you look at the Jays this year, can you manage expectations? Do you know what expectations are? Like, I have a feeling if they're good out of the gate, you might see a Taiwan Walker addition at a deadline because of what they did, Robbie Ray and Taiwan Walker last year. But I look at this team and they could be really good. And they could be mediocre.
Well, they were ahead of schedule last year. I think if last year was 162, they're probably not a playoff team without expanded playoffs. But that's fine, right? Because think of where they were the year before that.
Right.
I'm not a betting guy. If I was a betting guy, I'd say they're going to win between 85 and 90 games this year. And that would put you in a position where if you got to the deadline, yes, you would add. You would be looking for pitching probably. And now, there's no trades. Trades don't happen in April and May. So everybody
shut it off for now.
Just chill, because that never happens. But I think they'll take a look at the guys we're talking about and see how it goes. And Baltimore's going to be awful. I think the Rays are going to take a step back, although it's always dangerous to say that.
Yeah.
The Yankees are going to be really good. You know, it's a given. But, you know, I think right now they got a chance to finish second in that division and, you know, be a wild card team and maybe even do some damage in the playoffs. But, you know, it's still the journey is still on here. Like, the right. destination hasn't been reached. And I don't think that's going to happen in 2021.
Can I make a 15-minute question, a yes or no question?
Yes.
Will we see them in Toronto this year?
Yes. Might as well be optimistic, man. Like,
I'm with you.
Hey, to lose.
It wouldn't be Tim and Friends without you. I appreciate it.
Great to be back.
Here is Stephen Brunt, and hopefully he'll be back. Still to come, could Russell Wilson end up a member of the Chicago Bears? Adam Rank, James Jones weigh in. But up next, with the Leafs off for 4 days, the North could get really interesting at the top and the bottom. Three games tonight, Canucks Sens, Habs Jets, and the Battle of Alberta. We get the latest on all three next.
Tim and Friends, time for Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends, time for Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends.
And now, time for real sports talk with Tim McAuliffe and friends of the show.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs. Here for another hour of Tim and Friends on Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Still to come, Adam Rank on NFL free agency and what's shaping up to be a wild offseason. We'll also get NFL network analyst James Jones, former Green Bay wideout, joining the fray as well. Plus, David Amber after a busy weekend and a busy night to come in the NHL's North Division. In fact, that's exactly where we will start this hour. The Battle of Alberta is live across the country on Sportsnet 1 as well as Sportsnet West tonight. With more, let's head to Ryan Leslie to see if he can come up with another great impression, though no pressure at all, Ryan. None whatsoever.
Wow. Put me on the spot. I don't know what I have for you other than it was Michael Caine's 88th birthday yesterday. You know, in the 1960s, Michael Caine used to speak through his nose like this, but over the years, his voice has come down several octaves. I can't go fast because Michael Caine speaks very, very slowly. Anyhow, we are talking about the Battle of Alberta, and it is about the Edmonton Oilers. Indeed. You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. Anyhow, the Battle of Alberta keeps rolling, and the Oilers are looking for their fourth straight win in this matchup, and certainly the speed of Edmonton is what stands out. Mike Smith is going to get the nod, but when you're talking about the Calgary Flames, Daryl Sutter said head and shoulders, there is nobody better than Connor McDavid. I think that goes without saying. He agrees that not one person is going to be able to stop him, so he has his team as a unit once again dialed in to try to contain Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl in the Edmonton Oilers. This is a new-look Calgary Flames team. As you may have seen in the last two games, since Daryl's been behind the bench, it has been all business. Their attention to detail has been there, and it will be Jacob Markstrom getting the nod tonight. As Calgary feels, though, as though they are a different club this time around, we shall see this evening.
Listen, I didn't mean for you to get into your Michael Caine. I didn't mean for you. Like, we're not going to do this every time you come on. But I will say this. It seems like Daryl Sutter, got his systems in faster than you can say Yuri Bubla. Like, I can't believe, what is it, 18 shots in game one? It's like 43 shots in two games. It's amazing how quickly it seems like the Flames have adapted to Sutter's style.
It's a great point, and it's interesting when the talk around here, anyhow, has been about how they're playing faster. Not to suggest that they're skating harder, skating faster, or could keep up with the likes of Connor McDavid. That's not the point, but their puck movement has been so succinct. They've been so crisp. They're making that adjustment that Daryl has really simplified their game, and they feel as though, as I mentioned, that they are a different team. It's a little different buzz around the club, certainly around an empty Saddle Dome, but they feel it, and they feel as though they are a different club that has to play with a different type of pace. Their practices are shorter with a lot more pace, and it's really, at least through two games, it's been noticeable about how they haven't deviated from their plan. They've kept it simple, but they've been a faster club all around.
Crazy to say, but this might be a low-scoring game the way Mike Smith is playing as well, because he's been lights out for the Oilers. Ryan, always great catching up with you. Thanks for doing it. Love your haircut.
Scott Oak.
There is Ryan Leslie in Calgary for the Battle of Alberta. The Jets enter tonight's game against the Canadiens, 4 points back of the Leafs for top spot in the North. They have three games in hand. As for the Habs, they are just 3-3-3 under Dominic Ducharme. Third time's Ducharme. Their grip on the playoffs feels a little tenuous right now. Add the news today that defenseman Ben Chiarot will be out 6 to 8 weeks with a fractured hand. It gets real interesting for Montreal. With more on the Habs and Jets, let's send it live to Sean Reynolds in Winnipeg. Sean, what's going on, buddy?
Well,
Tim, first, I think you got to give me a heads up if I'm following Leslie from now on, because, I mean, he's coming on, he's doing impersonations. I need to bring, like a ventriloquist doll or do a magic show or something like that.
Homie.
You're hanging me out to dry here. I can't follow that.
Be
I can't follow. Okay. Well,
I'm
let's see. The Jets. Jets, hey, they're a pretty good team. And, you know, one of the things that makes them good is they don't get too high, they don't get too low, they don't get too excited. Their fans, on the other hand, they're really excited right now. And, hey, that's the best part about being fans. You get jacked up at times like this. They think there's an imposter sitting on the throne in the North right now. By the end of the week, that may be the case. It could be the Winnipeg Jets sitting there. But they're a team that doesn't get too far ahead of themselves. They've got the Canadiens ahead of them. And the last time they played the Canadiens lit them up by a 7-1 score. However, their season series, it's a little bit different. Jets have taken 3 of 4. And you know what, Tim? 3 of those 4 games, Montreal's probably been the better team, but Winnipeg has found a way to win, and that's something Toronto fans just learned about this Jets team. Ottawa fans learned it earlier. Vancouver fans learned it earlier. There's a lot of games this year the Jets haven't deserved to win, but they pull it out. This is a veteran-savvy team. They know how to find ways to win.
Sean, I was warning Leaf fans before that series started, man, this top six is really good. In fact, it might be better than your top six, and there was a lot of pshaw going on after last week. I think it changed. The one thing, though, we had Scheifele on our opening week for this show, and I love the way the team operates. The fans in Winnipeg may have thought it was a statement. Was that ho-hum for this team, or do you think quietly there was some confidence gained from what they did versus Toronto?
They may say it's ho-hum, but that's not the case. This team is excited, and they've said it numerous times. They're not afraid to stake the claim. It was Kyle Connor earlier in the year who said, we know we're good. This team has a swagger to it. They went into that series against Toronto trying to prove that they were the number one team in the North Division. Again, though, they have that swagger, but they don't get too excitable, and it's one of the reasons this team just doesn't. They've lost back-to-back games once so far this season. They get an edge to them after they lose a game. They always come back. They always put up a performance. And when they're not, they've got so many good players that they just need one or two guys going. Dominic Ducharme had said yesterday about the Montreal Canadiens, a very deep team, that they're not the kind of team that can succeed unless everyone is going.
Yeah.
The Winnipeg Jets are a team that only need a couple guys to show up and they can win games. There was a game against the Canadiens. Two guys showed up, Connor Hellebuyck and Nick Ehlers, and they win 2-1 in overtime. You saw similar acts of heroism against the Toronto Maple Leafs. There's just such high top-end skill that anyone on this team, on this roster, is a game-breaker. Yes, their defense could probably use a little bit of work, but this is a very complete team heading down the stretch, and everyone's getting to know it now.
Sean, you always have something that Ryan Leslie doesn't. Hair. Thank you, sir.
Hey, anytime. Bald is beautiful, though, and you too prove that.
I keep trying to tell people that. I don't know if they believe me. Thank you, buddy. Enjoy the game tonight. There is Sean Reynolds in Winnipeg. The Canucks and Sens, the other Canadian matchup tonight. See it in Canucks region at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. Tyler Demko. Wow. Demko will start in net for the Canucks. And speaking of goalies, it was a cool scene last night in Ottawa. Joey Decor got his first NHL win, beating the Leafs after being told he would go in the warm-up. No matter how old or how long it takes, the first one is always special. And that was in evidence with his interview with Kyle Bukauskas after the game. Thatcher Demko, don't know why I had the brain fart. Sorry, I apologize.
Gonna get emotional. Yeah, definitely not the way I drew it up, you know, in my head. But against the Leafs, you know, at home, obviously a crazy situation, and that's why you always got to be ready. And I just tried to get in the game and get myself going as fast as possible. And the boys played unbelievable. Like, oh, what an effort out of our group. I don't even have words right now, honestly. I just want to thank my family and for everything they've done for me. It's pretty special.
So awesome. 6th-round pick out of Arizona State, of all places. Let's go to the man who conducted that interview in Ottawa Live. We get more from Kyle Bukauskas. That was very cool.
Tim, thank you. I was beginning to wonder if I was going to get dropped here the way Sean Reynolds was carrying on the way he did. I thought I was going to run out of time here. But no, I'm kidding, of course. It's great to hear from Sean. But that was a lot of fun last night, no question. And, you know, the warm-up happens, your antenna's up, Matt Murray leaves the ice, and then here's this kid, Joey Decord, getting his fifth career start and winds up getting his first career win. And, you know, you saw the emotion there in the interview. This was a guy who, you know, growing up, going through the draft process, wasn't a highly touted kid, wasn't someone that, you know, the U.S. development program had their eyes on, never played games with the national team as a teenager. The Sens take a flyer on him in the seventh round. He goes to Arizona State. That the program was starting from basically nothing at the time, and by the time he left that junior year, he played all of but 8 minutes that entire season. Clearly, he takes a lot of pride in the work he did there with the Sun Devils and being part of a program that helped grow while he was there in net. And for him in Ottawa here now, you know, he realizes that this was a team that gave him a chance to get to the NHL and to make his first few starts of his career and to get a win here. I mean, this is a guy who clearly, he wasn't perfect last night, but he battled. And as you saw in the interview, someone who wears his heart on his sleeve. And it's not confirmed yet, but, you know, all signs point towards him going here again tonight against Vancouver. You know, Matt Murray's still dealing with that upper body injury. They've recalled Filip Gustavsson, but, you know, unless Decord woke up this morning a little stiff, I don't know how you don't go back to him here again tonight.
Obviously, at least from the start of the season, it appears as though the Sens and the Canucks will need goaltending to compete, but Thatcher Demko's been as good as anybody this month, hasn't he?
Really has. I mean, he was brilliant on the weekend against Edmonton as they made the push there late in the third period. They held them off, and, you know, this is still a very, very tough spot for Vancouver to be in. You know, they play the two here in Ottawa this week, and then they go to Montreal, the team that they're right now trying to catch for that fourth spot in the North Division. But, of course, Montreal does have a handful of games in hand. So if they plan to get anywhere right now, especially with Noah Elias Pettersson still and their bottom six is being held together with scotch tape at this point, he has to be the guy. You know, struggled a little bit early on. Everyone was wondering where the bubble Demko was from the playoffs last summer, but he's been really something for Vancouver. And so, you know, the young players here in Ottawa that have had some success of late, they got their hands full here tonight against Demko and the Canucks.
The crowd goes crazy for Kyle Bukauskas. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you.
They are sickos. All right, let's move on. Here to help us sort through a busy night is one of my all-time favorite co-hosts on this show. He is now otherwise occupied these days with this little thing called Hockey Night in Canada. David Amber joins me now. Welcome back, Big Shot. How are you?
Big Shot, I don't have my own show with friends. My goodness. Thanks for having me here. And I'm glad you got to Kyle. That interview last night was sensational. You don't see post-game interviews with that much candidness and emotion. It was fantastic. I'm so glad you got a chance to bring that onto the show today.
Yeah, it's so rare that you can get away from the cliches as that rinkside reporter. Like, that's your goal every time you do an interview, but it's so hard. And to see that was just kind of a nod to what it means to get the first, whether it's the first win or the first goal. I love seeing that stuff, no?
Oh, it's what we love. I mean, I've always said this. Sports is the best reality TV, and who could have, you know, if someone handed you that in Hollywood, this script, well, the goalie's going to go down and this kid's going to come in who's never won a game before, played college hockey at Arizona State.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be like, yeah, right. Going up against this juggernaut, the Leafs, who are one of the top scoring teams in the league. It wouldn't make sense. And of course, you know, he played great, held Ford in the third period. And it was a really nice story. And it's cool. I kind of like what's happening in Ottawa. It's fun to see, because in a couple of years, that's going to be a very dangerous team.
David Amber and his Viking fridge joining me here on Tim and Friends. Is it just me, Amber, or every time we think we've figured out the North, it changes?
You know what? I think we're learning a lot about this division, and every team's flawed in different ways, but every team also is dynamic in several different ways, and it makes it really interesting. The narrative keeps changing. You're putting up the standings right now, and we see, you know, Toronto had what we thought was a very comfortable, 9-point lead just, yeah, 10 days ago. And here they are now with two teams breathing down their necks, just 4 points away. The Jets actually have games in hand, so they could take over first place by the time the Maple Leafs play again on Friday. It's really interesting. I mean, we had the Oilers down and out after the Leafs swept them in those three games. Really, it comes down to not just who you're playing, but when you're playing them, right? Yeah. And tonight's a classic example. Ottawa was sitting at home, rested last night, waiting for Toronto. Tonight, Vancouver is sitting in Ottawa waiting for the Senators. So, you know, there's going to be these schedule situations. And we said this, Tim, we said this at the beginning of the year, 56 games, 116 nights, a compressed schedule. This is all about fitness and being, you know, fresh and fitness are going to be two key components to making that run and being able to end up in the top four in the North Division. So often it's not just who you're playing, but when you're playing them.
Goaltending also always huge. Demko, Price, and Smith all playing really well. It poses questions. Of those three, which do you think is the most sustainable, or do we just have to deal with the rises and falls in goaltending because that's been the NHL forever?
Well, that's kind of an unfair question. I mean, in the sense that Carey Price is still Carey Price. And yes, he's had some, you know, some a crest every now and again where things haven't gone so well, but he's still Carey Price at the end of the day. I still trust him very much. You know, we are seeing with Thatcher Demko, though, the bubble Demko seems to have reemerged over the last few weeks. And that's great news for Vancouver as they look to climb into a playoff situation. Ron pointed out on Saturday, though, they need an epic run. I think they have 26 more games or 25 more games. They literally are going to need to go, you know, I don't know, 19-6 or 18-7 to have a viable chance to make the playoffs. So he's going to have to be absolutely phenomenal as he was in the bubble. Mike Smith's a wily veteran. You know, the Oilers, they're hoping someone can get really hot, whether it's him or whether it's Koskinen. So it's really interesting. And also it all leads towards the April 12th trade deadline. Because I do think there's going to be some changes on some of these teams that really have huge aspirations in the playoffs, the Leafs, the Jets, possibly Edmonton as well, to try and do something to buffer that lineup in the same vein that Tampa did last year when they added Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow. They added a little bit of grit, a little bit of skill to push them over the top.
The one thing with Smith, I wonder if all the time off, because we haven't played as many games, is helping the 38-year-old. So I was trying not to be unfair with the question, but I do know what you're saying about Carey Price. Let me ask you this last one before I let you go, David. Hot stove stuff. You mentioned the deadline. Matthias Ekholm, all of a sudden, the rumors around him heating up. Nick Foligno's also been mentioned. Do you see Canadian teams in on guys like that?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, everyone's saying, man, imagine if Matthias Ekholm ends up with the Jets, right? You remember, their whole blue line got decimated for a number of different reasons between Bufflin and Trouba and Myers, et cetera, Sherratt. And they've revamped the blue line. Pionk's been a godsend. But if you could add another top two, top three defenseman like a Matthias Ekholm, that totally changes the complexion on a team that has incredible scoring up front in their top six, great depth players in their bottom two lines. And, of course, a Vezina-caliber goalie in Hellebuck. So that could really change the complexion of that team. I'm sure Kevin Cheveldayoff's kicking tires about that. And for the Maple Leafs, again, I mentioned Julian Breezeball and what he did with Tampa last year, Tim. Imagine a guy like Tanner Pearson if Vancouver starts to fall out of the mix. A guy with size, a depth forward. You mentioned Foligno. There's going to be a lot of names, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of movement. And we're hoping it all happens on the 12th because we're going to be on TV for, you know,
forever.
Copious amounts of hours. And if nothing happens, my goodness, we're going to be calling in Ryan Leslie to do every impression he has in the book.
Amber, I will say this. After this pandemic, I will never again turn down an invite to either the first day of Madness or the last day of March Madness. Appreciate you doing this.
No Duke, no Kentucky, baby. It's already a win for us. Let's go Cuse.
All right, be good, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
There is David Amber from his kitchen. Coming up, the NFL hot stove heating up. Where does Drew Brees land on the list of the greatest of all time? We'll break down both and more with the NFL Network's Adam Rank, who is my second co-host of the show. Next on Tim and Friends, he would qualify. Tim and Friends, coast to coast on Sportsnet 360 and on the OG of all sports radio in this country, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Our next guest is a Tim and Sid OG, joining us back in the radio days and just getting it. So we call on him as a co-host for a couple segments with me today. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, allow me to introduce, from Chicago, Illinois, by way of Corona, California, from the NFL Network, Adam Rank.
What is happening? Oh, my gosh. I am so thrilled to be a friend. Like Ken said last week, I was trying everything I can to be a part of this. I also, you know, the biggest thing for me coming in, besides trying to figure out whether you're going to wear a tie or not, and obviously I missed out. It's fine. I didn't want to upstage you.
That's fine.
But here's the thing. I was wondering about the music.
Yeah.
Because, like, when the Shield broke up, Roman Reigns kept the music, which is weird, but Mox and Rollins had to go with different stuff. So I was legitimately, and I didn't want to spoil it for myself, but I was so concerned, like, did he get the music? Like, who got the music? But I think we all have our answer now.
Yeah, I got so, and we switched some of it up and same beats, but this is basically Tim and Sid, and we couldn't afford any new graphics, so we just added "and friends" on the other side of the Tim. Like, let's be honest here.
It's like he just changed a couple of bars. You're like, oh, like when somebody jumps from the back in the day when they jumped from WWE to WCW, right. Like the theme song sounds similar,
right.
But not quite the same.
I didn't want to have a new Aunt Viv. I thought if you put someone in that spot, they're just going to be new Aunt Viv and everyone's going to hate them.
That's true. I didn't want that. I thought I was worried too if we were going to be able to go two balds, like if that was going to work. Yeah. But I think it's good. Yeah. I think it's a solid look right now.
There's a lot of white dudes shaving their heads these days. we had Ryan Leslie on just a moment ago. And he put on glasses last week, and my God, it looked like Spider-Man finding Spider-Man. But I digress. We were talking about Drew Brees a little earlier on in the show. And I was trying to say that his story, maybe his legacy, is the greatest underdog of all time, recruited by two schools. Like, every time we walk down this road of National Recruiting Day and try and say every year that Alabama won or LSU was second and Michigan was third, and we do even draft specials where guys are yelling and screaming about who goes where and how great they are, that maybe we need to go back to Drew Brees and have a look at his career.
Absolutely. And you got to remember, you know, he'd played so long, what era he was coming from, where everybody, it seemed, in the, you know, early 2000s, the late 90s and all that stuff, these quarterbacks had to be 6'4". They had to look like Troy Aikman. And Drew Brees is maybe a shade under 6 feet tall. And he's an unassuming player. But I mean, he's athletic. I mean, we've seen him dunk the football over the goalpost. And then he came out and just put up these fantastic numbers. And you look at what he's been able to do in the second part of his career. I mean, people forget that he was a really good quarterback for the then San Diego Chargers. Yeah. They had a guy named LaDainian Tomlinson. Remember this. The Chargers had the number one pick in the draft that season. A lot of people thought that they whiffed on trading out from drafting Michael Vick, of how that could have been a franchise changer for them. But then they moved down to spot five. Took LaDainian Tomlinson, took Drew Brees at the top of the second round, and really, and LaDainian Tomlinson, this is a little bit of a humble brag. He's got the locker, or he had the locker next to me. We're in our facility in Culver City. And I always asked him, I said, hey, man, I go, what would have happened if instead of drafting Eli Manning, perhaps you drafted, Larry Fitzgerald in that spot, and you run it a couple of years, you, Fitz, Drew Brees, what that could have been like. But unfortunately, that didn't work out for San Diego, but it worked out for New Orleans, got the Super Bowl and everything. And I think that we're pretty comfortable saying probably the greatest free agent signing of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you consider where Miami went instead of signing him as a free agent, they go Dante. I will say this though, when you bring up the little guys, every CFL fan in this country is saying, don't forget Doug Flutie opening that door and the Bills going with Rob Johnson and that being the mistake because Rob Johnson looked like the guy that you're talking about. And Flutie was just the winner. And it's amazing to see how it's going. Like even Russell Wilson dealt with the he's too short. And then Kyler Murray goes first overall, and I feel like that's the lineage. It's Flutie, it's Brees, it's Wilson, and now we just accept because the college offenses look like the pro offenses now anyway.
Yeah, and you know, if you want to go even further back in CFL history, let's talk about Damon Allen and he would have been able to do in the current NFL. It's funny because every time I would run into Marcus Allen in Canton in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I would always joke with them, I'm like, you might be the second best football player in your immediate family. And he always got a huge chuckle out of it. And then he would get very serious and always talk about Tom Flores getting his opportunity to get into the Hall of Fame. And of course, we all know that Tom Flores is in now. But Damon Allen is somebody that I look at of a guy you're like, gosh, I wonder what he could have done in the modern NFL.
Well, it's very funny because we had talked in the opening segment about there's a rumor, and I don't know how much you know about the CFL and the XFL getting together. And a lot of Canadian football enthusiasts are scared bleepless because it might mean the end of three-down football and it might mean the end of the big field. But the one thing that I will say forever is the influence on the American game from the Canadian game. Like, they were running RPO a long time ago in Canada. Like, Damon Allen would be an NFL quarterback without a doubt these days because
100%.
The game's changed. And Patrick Mahomes is like the personification of a CFL quarterback, like running and being able to throw. You had to do both in the CFL.
I love all of that. And I think there's a connection, too, because didn't The Rock, who now owns the XFL, he spent some time in the Canadian Football League, I believe, I remember that part of his story correctly.
He got cut by the Calgary Stampeders.
It is one of those things, too, where you look at the way that CFL runs. I think, and this is no disrespect to the CFL, I think that helps you out. I think playing three downs, not punting, all that stuff, I think that really helps them. And I think it's, you know, I don't want to look at it as a developmental league, because I know a lot of people take it very serious and everything like that. But I really do believe that there's enough football to go around that the Canadian Football League can still continue to thrive and move forward.
Adam Rank joining us from the NFL Network. I didn't think we'd go CFL, but why the hell not? Rank is versatile. The Saints could never find success without Drew Brees. Can they hang on with Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill?
I believe they can. I think we saw it a little bit last year. And what we saw out of Sean Payton was that he's very creative and not afraid to kind of do things a little bit differently. You know, a lot of teams don't like to rotate quarterbacks or bring in guys to do special packages or anything like that. And I really do believe that Sean Payton is just opening up his playbook and giving teams fits and things that they can't prepare for, or something extra that they have to prepare for. Now, I know it drives fantasy enthusiasts crazy because they want those touchdowns that Taysom Hill is taking to go to Alvin Kamara. But I do believe that, you know, Drew Brees returning, like, that might have actually been, like, that might have hurt them a little bit. Like, how much better could they have been? And this is no disrespect to Drew Brees, who's one of the best who've ever done it. But that Saints team looked a lot different when Taysom Hill was out there. And then when Jameis gets an opportunity to go out there and show what he can do, and I know that he had his troubles throwing the interceptions in Tampa Bay, but I think that that's a fun team. And I think that they're going to be back in the mix again. I think they'll be battling for the Super Bowl. And I think that, you know, it's tough to see a guy like Drew Brees retire, but I think ultimately they're going to be just fine.
All right. Adam Rank joining us here on Tim and Friends. Maurice Jones-Drew was supposed to join us, but apparently he got called into the NFL Network because the Pats are going crazy right now. First off, I've been trying to get MJD on the show for a long time, so thanks for the cosign on Maurice Jones-Drew. James Jones is filling in. What do you know James Jones well? I know that he played for the Green Bay Packers. Like, how close are you with James Jones?
It's too well for my liking. I don't okay. care for it. Like, he literally seeks me out whenever the Packers beat the Bears, which happens a lot. He's a great guy. Like, he's probably the only Packer that I like. And so I will co-sign on James Jones. He's good. He's getting into the fantasy game too. Actually, he beat me for the championship of the fantasy league that we did. And he knows his stuff. And again, a Packer's got to beat a Bear. I don't know why that always has to be that way, but I will co-sign for James Jones. Although, you know, MJD was my first choice, but don't tell him that.
All right. When we come back, maybe we'll talk to James Jones about the possibility of one Russell Westbrook going to Chicago. Could that happen? We will discuss James Jones next. More NFL talk on Tim and Friends Sportsnet. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. I am Tim. Adam Rank of the NFL Network is with us. And if you're going to add to the equation, why not do it with a former wide receiver, a former Super Bowl champion with the Packers, especially when you have a Bears fan on? James Jones joins us now. James, welcome to Tim and Friends. Did the Adam Rank co-sign help or hinder with this booking?
You know what? Adam's my guy, man. So once you said, you know, come on with Adam, and me knowing that the Packers beat up on the Bears this season, hey, I could have any conversation with him until next season starts.
Well, the Packers have gotten off to a pretty good start here in free agency. Aaron Jones, a lot of fans were worried because he wasn't franchise tagged, but it turned out to be okay. They signed him. How big was this deal for the Packers?
It's huge, man. This is your home run hitter, man. I know it's the three-headed monster over there. You have Williams, you have Dylan, but Aaron Jones is your bell cow. He's your home run hitter, and not just in the run game, but in the pass game as well. I mean, you can put him out there. He's running slants. He's running hitches. He's catching go balls. So this is a guy that you had to sign, and I'm glad they got it done and found a way to get it done, and now the next guy on the list has to be Corey Linsley.
I keep wondering about Aaron Jones and how he's always sharing the load. There's another guy seemingly every year added to camp, and yet every year Aaron Jones continues to put up numbers. Is that just the modern NFL, or do the Packers just keep challenging Aaron?
Well, I mean, number one, he's a baller. So it doesn't matter who you bring in there. I mean, shoot, when I was there, you brought in receivers every single year. We're like, dang, we drafted another receiver. Yeah. You know, but at the end of the day, he is a baller. They know that, and that's why they paid him that type of money. And I'm not surprised. It doesn't matter who they bring in there, man. This guy is a football player. He's a baller. He's always going to find ways to get the ball and then find ways to get him some touches.
You know, and speaking of wide receivers, it seems this offseason the Packers have been linked to seemingly every big-name guy. Every year it doesn't seem like the Packers sign one, which I'm happy with. You don't draft them either. Like this, I love the way that you guys approach that. But the thing is, this year, is it critical, though, for them to get a guy like Kenny Golladay or Will Fuller or even Curtis Samuel to make sure that they get over that hump and get to the Super Bowl?
I think so, man, because you got to believe that defensive coordinators fresh off the bus is to stop D.A., man. It's to stop Devontae Adams. And if you are able to get a guy like Kenny Golladay, who was my favorite guy in free agency, you can just throw the ball up to him and he's going to come down with it and make some plays. If Aaron Rodgers could have another guy like him on the other side of Devontae Adams, I mean, it takes this offense to a whole nother level. And don't get me wrong, I have confidence in the young guys as well. But at the same time, you need to get a guy that's going to come in there, demand some attention, make it easier on Devontae Adams and the run game. And Aaron Rodgers, if it's 3rd and 5, you know Tay's getting doubled. You know that this guy's going to go up and make a play. And they need one of those guys on the other side of Devontae.
We're getting signings flowing in by the minute, boys. And I want to get to a couple of them coming up. But first, before we move on from the division, is there a chance Russell Wilson ends up with the Chicago Bears, James?
Not this season. Nah, not this season. Russ waited too late. He waited too late to pout, man. And that's the deal. No, I just don't see it happening this season, man. Pete Carroll does an amazing job with his guys. Whenever anybody comes out and says they want out or anybody has an attitude, Pete Carroll's the guy to kind of call them and say, hey, chill out. We're going to get you everything you need, or what's wrong, why you ask for this. So I do not see Russ being moved this season. Now, if it doesn't go as planned, I do see him trying to get out of there next year.
Yeah, this sounds like a scared Packer talking right now. There was the first time, like in our relationship that I've had with James Jones, and this goes back to when he was a player with the team. I've never heard that tinge of worry in his voice, like when you talk about Russell Wilson. I think that he's trying to wish this into existence that he won't play in Chicago, but we'll see.
Hey, a little bit of that is true, man. I don't want to see Russ over there with that Bears defense, man, coming after the Packers year after year. So you're absolutely right, man. A little bit. Once anybody brings it up to me, I just act like I don't hear the question.
James Jones, Adam Rank here on Tim and Friends, live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. One of the teams making a little bit of noise today are the New England Patriots. And when the history was written on the 2020 season and the 2021 Super Bowl, a lot of people were jumping to this, well, Tom Brady showed Bill Belichick, and that's who the head of the snake was in New England. And I just kept saying, everyone knew they were up against the cap. Everyone knew they were missing players. And now we're seeing them start to spend money. Do you think New England could go right back to at least near the top? Because I believe the Bills are pretty good too. But do you think they can go right back to near the top in the AFC East?
Oh, 100%. I mean, not only that, when you look at the division, I mean, you see the teams that's in that division. This division is wide open, you know. But I absolutely think that the Patriots can compete with the Buffalo Bills and try to regain this division, man. I mean, with the signings they had, that's huge. But not only that, the guys that they're getting back on defense who took the season off due to COVID, you're getting some big-time name guys back on the defense. We all know Bill Belichick is a defensive mind. He's going to have those guys ready to go. I do think the New England Patriots is going to surprise a lot of people this season and be able to compete for that division up there with Buffalo.
You know, and speaking of Tom Brady and everything, Shaq is going to be returning to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They've franchise tagged Chris Godwin. It feels like they're getting the band back together, but you've been in this position before. How hard is it to repeat? Why have we not seen a team do it since what, 2004?
You know, because you're the measuring stick. Whenever you win the Super Bowl, Tampa Bay's coming off this Super Bowl win, and everybody's going to, whenever they're on the schedule, this is the team that we're trying to measure up against because they won the Super Bowl last year, and you're getting everybody's best punch. You know, I remember when we won it, we would play teams like the Chicago Bears who were no good, and what they were putting on tape, we're like, man, we are going to destroy the Bears. And then next thing you know, we look up when we're playing them in the fourth quarter and it's 7-7. And we like, how are these dudes so good? Why are they playing so hard? Well, the Packers won the Super Bowl. They're your measuring stick and you're going to get everybody's best punch. And that's why it's hard to repeat. And Tampa Bay is going to get that. But the first step is finding ways to keep key guys. And that's what they're doing. And they got a special thing going on over there right now, man, because not only are they keeping them, I don't even think these guys want to leave. And when you don't want to leave, that's a good sign to have. You get Chris back on the franchise tag. You get Barrett back. That's two big key additions to their team to be able to help them try to get back to the Super Bowl.
I love as we're talking about it, bleep is breaking everywhere. Gronk just re-signed 1 year, $10 million with the Bucs. So as you're talking about it, there's another piece.
Yeah. Absolutely. Another piece on the offense, another piece who's going to come back this season. You got to remember, he took some seasons off, man, so he was still getting back in the groove of things. Now his legs is going to be back fresh. You seen him coming on at the end of the season last year looking like the old Gronk, running like he has fresh legs. This is going to be a scary, scary part of their offense in year two in Tampa with Gronk and Tom Brady.
Yeah, I still hear that worry in your voice.
It is, man, because, my goodness, that's the NFC. You're getting all these big-time players back. Ah, I don't like it.
James, I always try and find that there's always one team that seemingly comes out of nowhere. And I'm not suggesting that this team comes out of nowhere, but the Rams are really interesting to me. And it looks like Leonard Floyd now 4 years, $64 million for him. That's a big – I don't know how much of that guaranteed, so I won't say exactly what that is. But it seems like a big deal. And if Stafford works there, this is a good team, is it not?
100%. And Stafford is going to work there, man. I've been on the other side of that sideline, man, playing against Matthew Stafford for a long time, man. And this dude is absolutely special. I tell people all the time, he could spin them with the best of them. Whoever you want to put in there, you want to put Aaron Rodgers in there, you want to put Tom Brady in there, you want to put Drew Brees in there, whoever you want to put in there, Matthew Stafford can spin it with the best of them, man. Matthew Stafford is a special quarterback, and the Rams got a good one. And I know everybody was looking like, man, they gave up that much for him. When he does work out, this Rams team is going to be in the playoffs and could be surprising a lot of people.
Do you kind of get jealous about that? Because it seems like the Rams – no, because the Rams continue to look like they're building to win right now. And no disrespect to the Packers, but last year they drafted a quarterback. Yeah. They drafted a running back. You could have taken T. Higgins. You could have taken other guys. At some point, and I know this, but it just feels like for Aaron's sake, it feels like the Packers need to do that because they need to go out there and try to win right now because who knows how many years he's got left. It feels like they need to make the moves that the Rams are making, not necessarily for the quarterback, but for what the Rams are doing, trying to win right now.
You're absolutely right, Adam, and you keep on opening up old wounds, but that's okay.
That's all I got.
Right, man, we do not know how long Aaron Rodgers is going to play. He just came off an MVP season. He's playing at a phenomenal level. get more pieces around him so he can go out here and win one or two more Super Bowls before he gets out of there. But don't let everybody else get better around you and you just keep sitting there saying, we have Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is going to make everybody around us great. And, yes, he's been doing that. Aaron is special, one of the greatest to ever do it. He makes everybody around him better. But let's make it easy on him right now, and let's go out there and get some pieces like Kenny Galladay and be able to help him get back to a Super Bowl and win this thing.
Super Bowl champ James Jones, fantasy champ Adam Rank joining us here on Tim and Friends.
No, he beat me this year. James beat me.
I didn't say this year. I just said once. I just said, hey, before we let you go, though, James, I got to ask you. You were speaking about surrounding him with weapons and doing the things to make Aaron Rodgers be able to win now. And all I could get out of my head, Deshaun Watson. Like, do you see him staying in Houston for the long term or even for this year?
I don't see him staying unless they do something to really show him that, hey, we got your back. We're going to build around you. We're going to get you everything you need to go out here and be successful and win some championships. Deshaun Watson sees Russell Wilson. He sees Patrick Mahomes. He sees what these guys have around him. He sees that these guys are successful in the playoffs every year. He knows that he's only getting older. He's not getting younger. So you want to have an opportunity to go out there and be in the playoffs every year and compete for titles, man. And if the Houston Texans don't show him that they're ready to do that same thing by getting them the players on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball, then, hey, listen, I want out, and the Houston Texans should let him go if you're not going to build around your franchise quarterback and give him an opportunity to fight for a title every year.
Go build the team Chicago with all the money. Yeah, go build. Go to Chicago. Listen, fellas, the trash talking is part of the friendship. Love it. Thank you both for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Not a problem. So thanks for having me.
All right, there is Adam Rank and James Jones. We'll do that again. That was fun. Time for one last break. We'll get to Last Call with Jesse after the break. And a Monday tip of the cap goes to a Canadian, an East Coaster, a Nova Scotian. Next on Tim and Friends. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. As a part of Last Call, every Monday we'll give a tip of the cap to someone or something from the weekend. And Saturday was a big day for basketball in Nova Scotia, as the Hornets' Nate Darling became the first player from that province to appear in an NBA game. So we decided to call on our favorite Scotian, or at least one of our favorite Scotians. Ken Reed will get mad at me. Arash Madani for a special tip of the cap.
Understand this about us. We know you think of Nova Scotia for the water and the seafood, the tranquility of our small towns, and of course the Halifax nightlife, which without Old Pizza Corner isn't quite the same. But what you don't know about us is just how big basketball is throughout our province. We understand why. Sid's been the planet's best hockey player of the 2000s. Nate's one of the finest there is today. In our country's other winter sport, one of curling's most identifiable, she's a Nova Scotian too. But believe this, so much of our sport's DNA over the years has been tied to hoops.
Every dog has its day. Huskies, this one is yours.
This was our March Madness.
They can take the lead here. 5 seconds, up it goes, it won't drop.
These scenes were a staple every spring on the corner of Duke and Brunswick. Before Vince told us it's over, we'd beam when the slick TV crews from Toronto came for the final eight and bellowed that Halifax was Canada's basketball capital.
Halifax, one of the best basketball cities in Canada.
Our Coach K is a national treasure. If his ex-teams or SMU or Acadia were playing on the third Sunday in March, good luck getting a ticket inside that old Metro Center.
Well, you talk about the extra man, they are surrounding us collectively here at the Metro Center.
Except that's where it felt it would end. We wrapped our arms around Will Njoku in the 90s when the big man from Halifax West and St. Mary's got drafted. Indiana took him in the second round. He and Reggie Miller were gonna be boys. Seemed too good to be true. It was. One injury, then another, and Njoku's pro career took him all over Europe. The old-timers who came to high school gyms told us of New Waterford's Richie Spears. He got drafted by the St. Louis Hawks back in the day, didn't quite make it. Ted Upshaw of Windsor Regional was runner-up for National High School Player of the Year. And Fred Perry, he brought that Metro Center to life when leading X to back-to-back Canadian titles. We'd always wonder, could he be the one? Is this the time? Will the NBA come calling? Didn't happen. Through all the years and over the generations and the black and white antenna era giving way to color TV and now web streams, never one of us. Then came Saturday.
This is history being made right now with Canadian Nate Darling checking into the game, the first ever Nova Scotian to play in the NBA.
He's from suburban Halifax and a star for the provincial team. Canada's under 19 group that won gold at the FIBA World Cup, he was there for it. Played college basketball at two NCAA programs, undrafted, and last November a chance, Charlotte offering a two-way contract. And then on the 13th day of March in 2021, there was Nathan Joseph Darling, suited up in an NBA game against the team he grew up watching, no less. One of our own. He made it. He did it in the NBA. The best part, Nate isn't the outlier. Don't look now, but Lindell Wigginton of Halifax is in the Timberwolves pipeline. He's next man up for Minnesota. We waited a long time to get to this point, but here we are. Nova Scotia's got the ocean and the seafood and Crosby and McKinnon and the warmest hospitality. But now, at last, a presence in the NBA. Arash Madani, Sportsnet. Originally from Truro, Nova Scotia.
Yes, Madani. Although the Romanuk on the sound ups from Halifax, like I know he called X's win, but Uncle Timmy called a few games out in Halifax. Holy cow. And I thought it was going to be Lindell Wigginton. Just looking up his numbers this year with the Timberwolves team, the Iowa Energy of the G League, they're nice. 17 points per game. He's upped his assists, 5.2 points per game. I thought it was going to be him to be the first Nova Scotian to play in the NBA. You know what? Second ain't all that bad either. So we'll keep an eye on Lindell as well. Great story, Mr. Madani. Meanwhile, Mr. Rubinoff, you have last call, or at least the rest of last call for
I
us.
I do indeed. Why don't we start on the ice with
NHL?
Hold on.
Am I being petty?
No, absolutely. Could have used the Tim McCauley right, sound up in there. No doubt. Come on. Yeah. The Penguins.
Like 10 champions.
Look for their sixth straight win tonight when they host the Bruins. You can see it on Sportsnet East in Ontario in just a few minutes at 7 Eastern. Pittsburgh has gone 12-4 since hiring Ron Hextall and Brian Burke on February 9th.
Yes.
Timmy, how much credit does Berkey get for their recent play?
What are you trying to suggest, that he walked into the locker room and said, quit clowning around?
I think like, that's probably exactly what happened.
Berkey runs in there and starts throwing elbows. Like, quit clowning around in here. I think they needed to know what they were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Hextall and Burke said, we're going to win now. And they kind of realized, I think what was happening there was a middling. Not sure if they're going to start building for the future or now. And I think they got their answer. And it's like, you better win now or nothing's here. And we're starting to see that.
Gave them that little bit of confidence that the Penguins need.
A little bit of push, yeah.
A little bit of push. All right, let's go on to Kawhi Leonard related last call. How about this? The Clippers were blown out by the Pelicans last night, 135-115. After the game, Kawhi said the team's lack of consistency is very concerning. Kawhi can opt out and become a free agent after the season. The Raptors have a lot of cap space. Tim, is there any chance he returns to Toronto because he should never have left?
So what you're asking me is, instead of him whispering to the front office and Steve Ballmer, go get Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
He's just pulling back and saying, you know what? Screw it. I don't want Kyle Lowry to come here. Kyle Lowry, stay in Toronto. We run it back with the Raptors.
Don't see it. I don't think so. We both took a huge sigh of, it wasn't relief, it was distress when Mark Spears on Friday said that potentially Kawhi would like having Kyle in LA. That would not.
But if you see a team that's given up all its first round picks.
Yeah.
To get Paul George, how do you also see that team improving? I think there could be more meat on the bone than you're allowing for in this moment. That team's going to have a real tough time improving.
Yeah.
Because they have no first-round picks for the deal for Paul George. So if Kawhi's a dude that looks like he wants another title, why not run it back in Toronto?
Yeah, I mean, it would good. Yeah. Hey, whoa.
You didn't
why
think
not?
I was going to go there?
I didn't know you were going to go there. But
why not, Pop?
I think a lot of Raptors fans watching will take that. A little sign-off from Timmy there.
Listen, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying it's probably going to
happen. Get the choppers ready.
Yeah, get the choppers ready. Get CP24.
Check the airplanes, registries, never check mind. All that. The itinerary, we got it.
We are done for the day. We'll see if Kawhi is done in L.A. Thanks for spending your Monday with us. We'll be back tomorrow with a Jays roundtable and plenty more. For everyone who joined his friends, thank you. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.